Hey everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Brew University Book Club. I'm Jeff Weaver, Training Director for J.J. Taylor and your host, and I am here alongside my regular compatriot readers who are going to help us break down not one, but two chapters today. That's right. It's our season one exploration of Entree Leadership by Dave Ramsey, and we're going to be covering chapters 9 and 10 all at the same time. Don't worry. Buckle in. It's going to be a great ride. But we'll be discussing chapter 9, Financial Peace for Business, and chapter 10, The Map to the Party, all in the same run. And to help us do that, I have my party people alongside me, starting with our delivery director in Tampa, Mr. Dustin Schatz. Hi, Dustin.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Chris Morgan, our sales manager in Fort Myers, is here. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Jeff.
Dan Endres, also with us from Minnesota. Dan, our C&G sales director. How's it going, Dan?
Well, Jeff, thank you.
Got Suzanne Borgia on the line, all the way from Tampa in Human Resources. Hi, Suzanne.
Hey, here for the party.
Glad. It wouldn't be a party without you, Suzanne. And it wouldn't be a party without Lisa Velez, either, our e-commerce director. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Great, as always. Glad to have you with us. Chapter 9 is Dave's talk about financial peace for business, which financial peace is the core of what his group really does. The Lampo Group is all about financial advice and financial security and getting out of debt and living debt-free. And so here you can really see the DNA of the company and their financial peace mission coming into this part of the book. So let's talk just for a few minutes about Chapter 9. What did you think? What did we take away from it? Again, I know very much geared towards sole proprietors or small business owners, but there's definitely some stuff I think that can be applicable to us. So thoughts on Chapter 9?
I think something that he said that could be applicable to, just everyday life is, if you and your business are attractive, you don't have to impress anyone with your furniture or toys. And he was telling a story about, I think he was at a meeting and then he sat around with folding chairs and added some big, extravagant office. And that's how they were getting deals done. And I solely believe that you don't have to have all this impressive stuff to get things done, to be on top of the game. You don't have to have the nicest of everything. That doesn't have to do with that part of the business. You don't need the nicest furniture in your office to be a successful business. I really like that he pointed that out and talked about how, even with him, I think they were buying leftover furniture to furnish their offices. So I really like that.
Yeah, I loved the whole authenticity of Dave Ramsey in general, because again, I follow FPU through personal finance. And I love that the same premise that he has for his personal finance is something that he advises small business owners to do. Don't go into debt to make money. That is just ridiculous. To purchase the big, $50,000 truck when you're starting your brand new landscaping company, it's like, don't do that. That makes zero sense to do. Grow small and grow steady. And I really liked the way that he kind of prefaced this whole thing together.
I think the whole key is just to be a good steward of your finances, but also the equipment you've been given, the tools you've been given to do the job. Don't overspend. Be wise with what you've been entrusted with and make good decisions, because ultimately it's not yours. It's yours to use as a tool, but it is not yours.
Yeah, I agree so much with that, Dan. Dustin?
Oh, I was just going to agree with Dan also, because I know as of right now, we're working on the budget for next year. And in delivery, we deal with a lot of trucks, trailers, pallet jacks, all kinds of equipment. And the first thing everybody wants is all brand new stuff. So you really got to take a look at it and, see what you need for the business. You don't want to ask for $1 million in equipment if, you don't need it. So it's kind of, only buy what you need. And, kind of roll it slow. If you can, if you can make it, not saying that you need to cheap out on anything, if you need the equipment, but just being smart and responsible with your decisions.
I think in reading this chapter, it made me appreciate our leadership and how smart they are with making decisions for supplies and purchasing and acquisitions. We've always heard and talked about how John Taylor makes the smart acquisitions that aren't going to put the company that we have at risk, even when, he wants those distributors really badly, but, keeping our current company in mind when making those decisions. So it always in reading leadership books, it always makes me think, oh, we do things right. It's so good.
I totally agree. It's so true. I think several great points that you guys are making. One is there is that interesting juxtaposition, right? Because Dave talks about, oh, you know, we were doing deals off of card tables and Apple crates. But now if you go or know anything about them, they have one of the most beautiful office buildings in all of Nashville because they can afford it today. And I think it's very much a similar approach that we have here. I mean, if you look around, I think we do have beautiful offices and nice equipment, and it is newer stuff. And, you know, we keep our trucks 5 years and then roll them over, or, you know, we do replace things as we need to. But it's about that balance between we're not attached to that stuff because it's new. We're attached to that stuff because we can, and we do it in cash, and we do make sure that we can put forward and pay for the things, and we do try to be responsible with it. And exactly, Dan, what you were saying about, you know, being a good steward of the money, I think that's the important part for leaders of any stripe in any way of the organization is it's not our money. You know, it's the company's money, and it's collectively it's our money. And when we do well with it, we all benefit from that. When there's more left over at the end of the year, that's going to turn into bonuses and raises and better benefits and things like that. And I can't tell you how many times I've been sitting here in the Jupiter office and I have watched those discussions take place about, well, what do we do? And the answer is always, how do we reinvest it into our people or reinvest it into our business? How do we use it to keep, you know, can we absorb more of the insurance costs? Can we take a bigger chunk out of having to, you know, reduce benefit costs for people? Can we give them back a higher raise at the end of the year? It's always about being able to do that. You can do that when the business is healthy and when we all do our part and spend judiciously and think about what we're spending on and, you know, get the right stuff and get the good stuff and do it nice. And certainly I think our mentality here is we'd rather buy a nice piece of equipment once than three shoddy pieces of equipment three times over. But I also think it's that, you know, that comes from the fact that everybody here has that sense of responsibility that we want to do the right thing. We want to spend the right way and spend where we should, but also avoid where we don't and make best use of everything we have so that we can continue to have nice things.
Yeah, I took it as he was also speaking on people who want to buy these things just for the looks of it or the aesthetics of, look, we have nice things, instead of using them to better your business.
Exactly. Two stories come to mind. One reminds me, Chris, I remember hearing this story from some of the execs about going to NBWA every year. And our guys go to NBWA in Washington, D.C. once a year. And, you know, they would fly in on commercial and stay at a decent hotel and get around D.C. for the week and do just fine. The Budweiser guys, back before they were bought out by an international conglomerate, they'd fly in on a private jet. They were staying at the W Hotel. They were, you know, upscale, first class all the way. And the minute they got bought out by corporate owners, they were flying in on coach and they were staying at the Radisson. And it was just a completely different. And you could hear them grumbling about it was the story, is that, you know, these guys were just so grumpy that all that had been yanked. And that's the two extreme ends of that spectrum, right? Is, you know, when they weren't owned by corporate masters who watched every penny, they were going way over the top and flash and over substance. Exactly what you said, Chris. Versus once that came down and the edict changed, all of a sudden it was bare bones. And I think for us and what we do, it's nice to live in that happy middle where, yeah, we can do better than bare bones, but we deford that by not going to the top end where it's flash just for flash's sake. You're exactly right. Other thoughts on financial piece for business?
It may seem like common sense to most people, but one thing that I picked up in here that I really appreciated and kind of resonated with me is his reference to the P&L versus a budget. And a P&L is a look in the rearview mirror, whereas a budget is a look through the windshield. Obviously, I know what a P&L and a budget are, but thinking of them that simply kind of opened my eyes to the value of each. And I think I'll look at them differently moving forward.
I've always loved that analogy. I think that's such a great analogy that, yeah, P&L is important, but it is a rear look at how we did. It's the evaluation of our goal. The budget sets the goal. The budget sets the direction. That's what matters more. And, you know, it's great to find out that we achieved what we wanted to, but if we didn't have a plan to get there, it was more luck than skill. So having that budget makes it a skill task where we can look ahead. I think that's great point. I do love that too. I've adopted that a lot in my personal life as well as in business, making sure that I have a budget for that exact reason. So, chapter 10, the map to the party in our continuing look at entree leadership. This is about great communication and how great communication makes great companies. He calls it a map to the party, and opens by talking about a little story about how back in the ancient times, back in the cave-dwelling days before there were things like cell phones and GPSs in cars, they would actually have to write directions to other people to help them get to the house party that they were having on the weekend, and that communication would determine who got to the party on time and had a good time versus who would miss the party altogether. And so the map to the party and communication. What did you guys think of this chapter, and what were some of the highlights?
I loved it. This is a chapter I thought written. I loved it. Let's just put it that way, you know, because whenever I hire somebody in new to my department, it's like I spend a little time training with them, and you know, at the time, we'd walk around the warehouse with them. And the first thing I tell them in our little walk is, I am an oversharer. I overcommunicate. I tend to say things, you know, but from the very beginning, you know, I really do. I'm an overcommunicator because I feel like everybody needs to know not only what we're doing, but why we're doing what we're doing, you know. And it's like I like to see all the pieces kind of tied in together, all fit in together, so that this way everybody knows what's going on, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, I personally loved it. This chapter made me feel like I wasn't an over talker, but I was communicating just fine, you know? So I loved it.
Gave you permission to be an oversharer, didn't it?
Absolutely. Sure did.
Good. Other top thoughts, opening statements, as it were.
I thought all the, just like Lisa said, but all the stuff about communication was just great. I mean, he talks about being a leader. If you're not sick and tired of saying the same thing over and over, you're likely not communicating right with your team. And you know, I think about that with my team. I think about that with my kids. You know, the amount of times you tell people things over and over again, but you have to, because that's what we're here to do. We're here to lead them and here to almost coach them into the right ways. And so that really resonated with me.
Really important chapter, I think. And as we dig in, I mean, one of the pieces that stood out for me is just without communication, the stories that people make up. So you definitely want to steer the story so they get the correct one, or else they're going to make things up or rumors. So I think this is a really important chapter.
Yeah, and I was just going to say the same thing, just how important communication is and how this chapter really drove home how important it is. You know, coming from delivery, where we work with the warehouse team, we work with all the different sales channels, and having such a big department with so many different people touching so many accounts, it's such an important thing for us to do in delivery, and it's something we've gotten a lot better at, and we still have room to grow. So yeah, definitely, I like this chapter a lot.
I agree with all of that, and we'll add that one thing that I've learned through some of Jeff Weaver's courses, but also just through my years of managing people, is everybody needs a different type of communication. Some need a phone call, some need a text, some respond to email, some want something handwritten. Some want you to go out in the field and visit them and have an in-person conversation. So communication can take many, many, many different forms. And it's not a one-size-fits-all proposition. So communication is absolutely essential, but the right kind of communication is just as important.
All excellent points, and we're going to dive into each of them more in depth as we talk about this chapter. I like this chapter for a couple of reasons. One, obviously, is as you guys have all said, it really drives home the importance of communication. I like the analogy that he starts with here. I like map analogies in business in general. If you haven't noticed or haven't been through GMP yet, you might not know, but I love a good map analogy. And we talk about leaders being the compass in the organization to know which way is up. And but you know, the map is important too. And I think, you know, for my world, training is really all about how do we create the most detailed, accurate map possible so people can navigate and find their way. And communication is one of the key elements in creating a very clear and detailed, as it were, quote, map for our teams to know what to do. It's the lay of the land. It's knowing where things are. It's knowing where the boundaries are, what's inbounds, what's out of bounds, who we are as an organization and how we operate and how we think. These are all things that the quote map is able to tell us. And so training and is really all about creating the most detailed map we can to be able to hand a new person and say, this is everything we know is here. This is everything the way it is. And this is what you need to know to be successful and navigate. You pair that with a good solid compass and people knowing which way is north by knowing their core values and mission. And I think that's how things get done, which is great. So I'm a big fan of this chapter, big fan of the map analogy in general. I think it's a really, really fun part of how he brings this together. And I really like that he calls it a map to the party, because I've always enjoyed the idea that as leaders, we build, you know, I always say you want to build a club and you want people to want to be a part of that club. He calls it a party here, but the analogy is apropos, right? You're trying to build something that people want to be a part of, your team. And if you have a team that people want to be a part of, they're going to naturally be drawn to it. You give them a great map, they'll get to that party and be a part of it and be there for the whole thing. When you have a bad map, people can't get to the party that you've created. So if you think of yourself as a leader as, I'm creating this team, I'm creating this party, this club that people want to be a part of, then making sure people can get there and understand exactly how to do that is such an important piece of what we're expected to do. So let's talk about one of the first things he mentions that I thought was great is he gives a couple of reasons for poor communication. He says it's either a lack of priority or a lack of will. What do you guys think about that statement? And, you know, is it lack of priority or lack of will that tends to plague most leaders? And how do we overcome things like that?
I really think it's a lack of priority. I like the way he kind of explained it or described it as a mushroom communication with their team, keep them in the dark and feed them manure. You know, it's like if you don't explain, if you don't communicate what the priorities are to your team, then it's kind of becoming like herding cats. Nobody knows what they're supposed to be doing, what due north is, you know? And so it's kind of like, you know, you have to be able to set those priorities and establish them for the people on your team.
I kind of went the other way with it, and I thought it was more of Ramsey talked about leaders being too arrogant to communicate, thinking, you know, I'm here and they're just peons and they don't need to know, or that's not for them to know. And I think that's just not the right way to do business. I love here, you know, with JJ Taylor, that our leadership is very open with us, you know, and even when the decision is not the greatest thing, well, at least in our eyes, the greatest decision ever made, but they're very open with us and explain, this is why we're doing these things. And then we can now go out and explain to our people, this is why we're doing these things, and everyone gets on board. So,
yeah, I think it's, you know, great art can be interpreted more than one ways. And I think you're both right. I think it's both sides of the thing. Sometimes we're feeding our team, you know, crap and expecting them to get going at it because we don't have time and we don't realize, and we're not putting it as a priority to do better for them. And sometimes it's because we think, you know, things are need to know, or that we don't need to explain ourselves, or that we're trying to, you know, protect certain confidentialities and stuff. But at the end of the day, Chris, you're right on. Our culture, it's in our core values. Our culture is built on honesty and accountability. And if we can't be transparent, if we can't explain ourselves, how are we expecting our teams to have confidence in what we do? Even when they may not like a decision, they can respect it if they can understand it. And that's such an important part of taking the time to slow down and not just giving our teams the because I said so, or because that's the way it is, or you don't need to worry about that answer, but instead being fully transparent. And this is why we do what we do. And sometimes we'll get it right and sometimes we'll get it wrong, but at least you understand where we're coming from, I think gives people a confidence that makes them more willing to engage and more committed to the cause. So I'll throw this at you. He gave us the two reasons for poor communication: lack of priority, lack of will. I think there might be a third in there, and I'm curious what you guys think of this. I think the third and maybe the more dangerous one is a lack of awareness by many leaders who simply think they're better at communicating than they really are. I think a lot of our leaders, a lot of good managers understand that communication is important. They believe communication is important, and yet they come up short on communication, not really because they don't prioritize it, but because they think the communication they're giving their teams is good enough as is. And when you read through his discussion about how many times you have to repeat yourself, how often you need to come back to certain important things, I can't help but wonder if sometimes we miss the mark, not because we're not trying, but because we just don't realize our efforts are coming up shorter than they should. You guys ever feel that way? I think that at least for me rings true, that maybe sometimes my issue is, it's not that I don't care to communicate or that I'm not trying to, it's that I think I've done a good enough job when maybe I haven't.
I could definitely say I've fallen into that. You know, speaking how Dan was talking about a little earlier, different styles, you know, with different team members, you know, some team members just want a text message. Some team members, when I have to have a conversation with them, it has to be, I have to go meet them out in the market. It has to be face to face, and because they need to see my body language, they need to hear it directly from me. So I've learned, you know, when I first became a manager, I thought everyone got their information the same way. So whatever way I liked it, I figured they wanted that way too. And I learned that I had, you know, seven different people, or how many different people, that wanted all their information differently. So yeah, I believe just knowing how to communicate to your people is huge. And that managers or leaders who think they're doing it right, but they miss the mark, just kind of how you said, Jeff.
I think over communication can also be a problem if it's not productive communication. Oftentimes, you know, an inbox will fill up with 50 different emails, but if only two of them are important, those two are going to get buried in the other 48. So one thing I've really tried to do in the art of communication is significantly limit what I send out electronically, especially. And I really try to limit it, honestly, to one email a day to my entire sales team. And what it is, it's a roll up of everything they need to know as a recap from today and looking forward to tomorrow or the remainder of the week. And that has really been successful. They've actually thanked me for not filling their inbox up with needless things or forwards or reply alls, just one hard-hitting, to-the-point message that they can take and work from. So over-communication, although you might think you're doing a great thing, can actually create a negative.
That's a really great point, Dan. There is sort of a snow blindness that effect that happens when we look at that inbox and there's 45 new emails that need to be looked at. All of a sudden the inbox just kind of goes white over our eyes and we're like, I can't focus on any one of those things. How are there 45 new things to be done? So it's over communicating the right things, but accurately communicating the other things and making sure that even though we're being repetitious, we're not being extraneous and being sure that we target the right message to be repeated constantly or focused in on, I think is a really key point. And what a great idea about doing a one email a day. I hadn't considered something like that myself, but that's a really great technique. It's cool that that's working with your guys. I like that.
Yeah, and just to touch on what Dan was talking about, I see a lot of either over communicating or under communicating a specific topic. So I'll see a lot of my new managers, a lot of new team leads, they'll send out, hey, this account's coming back, and that's all they'll say. So now it starts a chain of, well, why is this coming back? Why did this happen?
Yeah.
So just kind of grooming them, and I'm sure Lisa, you see it all the time with us.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to get just the key points, keep it short, short and sweet. So you kind of have that, you know, that sweet spot, not too much information where now it becomes a chore to read it, but has just enough that you don't have to ask 15 questions afterwards too.
Jeff, to kind of bring it back to what you were saying earlier, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you were saying that there was a third possibility or third reason why communication, there's a third reason people don't communicate. And part of it was being lack of awareness. I think part of that is because of, and there's something that Dave had put in his book about relationships and, you know, leaders with their team, it becomes almost transactional versus relational. And I mean, and to Dan and to Dustin's point about over communicating and, you know, honestly, it all depends on the person that you're with. And it depends on the time on every situation is a different situation, you know, and it's like, I mean, I really value, the back and forth between my group and what we have going, you know, but yeah, I mean, there is something to be said about making sure that you're aware as to what needs to be filtered down to your group.
I like that you brought up the transactional piece, Lisa, because I think that was something that he talked about that I really enjoyed. Is he talked about, you know, that the communication he had with his team had become exactly that, transactional, where they were only talking to each other when there was something to be gained for themselves or for the business, and that every interaction had become about the next problem and the next problem, where all of a sudden it's this constant cycle of the only time we spend all day interrupting each other was what he had talked about. And I thought that was such a great piece. And he talks about that in the context of how important meetings are, which I want to get into, because I do think that the meeting piece is a huge part of this. But yeah, it is important that it's the right kind of communication, for sure, that it's not just talking for the sake of talking, but that what we're talking about is there to add value and move things forward.
I think for a few of us too, especially Dustin and Chris, we've got managers and sales reps and delivery drivers out in the field. We don't have necessarily in-person access to them, well, especially now during COVID, at all. So our electronic communication, whatever form that is in, needs to be absolutely spot on, because we don't have that luxury of even a Friday morning sales meeting anymore. To touch base in person. So the nonverbal piece too plays into that too, that you can only say so much through an email or a text message, and you could actually say something without saying something, and an unintended consequence could come from it. So especially, you know, for those of us that don't have direct physical access to our teams, I think this communication piece is critical right now.
Yeah, context matters a lot, and we gain so much of our context through nonverbal communication, through body language, tone of voice, and signaling like that. And when it comes down to text, we're left with what's the word on the page, and that creates a vacuum of information, right? We read something, we don't know the tone that was sent in. We don't necessarily know the temperament of the person as they were writing in, so it creates that vacuum of information. And in an absence of information, people make up stories. And the stories they make up are always worse than the truth. That's the other half of that I think people tend to forget, is it's not just that we make up stories, but I've never seen anybody with absence of information go, oh, wow, they're not giving us much these days. It must be going great. Everything must be fantastic. No, we always devolve right into conspiracy theory the minute we stop hearing from our leaders. And so it's important to realize that, yeah, when we lack context or when we lack information, our teams are going to make up a story to fill in the blanks. And that story is almost inevitably going to be worse than if they had just known the truth from the get-go. So let's talk a little bit about meetings, because he talks about staff meetings in here, and I think it is such an important part of what he has to say in this chapter, because this is one of my little personal missions in life, is to get people, to get managers and leaders to make time for regular staff meetings. I teach this in Death by Meeting. I teach this in, you know, communication classes and everything. I can't begin to overstate the value of having a place to put things. And Dave alludes to it directly in here, is that they, you know, that regular meetings, it becomes a place to put stuff so that we don't spend all our day interrupting each other. But before even that, I want to knock down some of this objections that people have about meetings, because if he can get 300 people together every week on a Monday and Wednesday morning to have a staff meeting, for the love of goodness, if you've got 7 folks on a team, there's got to be a way to do it, right? I don't want to freaking hear about nobody's got time for a staff meeting when this group is getting 300 team members together, according to him. But what did you guys think about the making time for staff meetings and making that happen?
Yeah, I also agree with, you know, if you have a regular meeting, your team members will, instead of shooting you off a request or shooting you off 100 things, they'll wait till they know, they'll say, okay, we have a meeting Wednesday morning, I'll just wait till Wednesday and we'll talk about it then. And to be, not to be funny, but a lot of times they'll figure out whatever the issue was before that Wednesday morning meeting, or they'll just resolve it, or they'll say, oh, I took care of it. So I like that piece of it. I notice that with my team all the time. Like if I tell them, hey, this Wednesday we're having our regular meeting, they'll wait all till Wednesday before they send out, you know, this, and that. So yeah, I really, that really resonated with me.
Suzanne, I know HR has a regular weekly meeting, and it for me, at least, it's become a good place to take some of the stuff that I feel like, is this really worth interrupting the HR team during the week, or can I just wait till the Monday meeting and roll it out and have it be part of next week's agenda? And so I think it works well in that, and I you know, being on that meeting with you, that's kind of always been my take on it. But what are your thoughts on that weekly that you guys have?
Well, that, yeah, it's a good time to bucket those topics, but it's also, you only have to tell the story once, you know, instead of calling Mercedes and you and see what David thinks about something. It's a time we can kind of just brainstorm it. And we often, if it's going to go long, we'll take it offline if we need a separate meeting for it. But it's definitely helpful for our team, especially for different projects. But to just to the point of, you know, pre-COVID, obviously, when sales were coming in for their meetings, it was also a time that we in HR knew that we should be around because the guys are in the building. So a lot of times they didn't want to call and, you know, think they have a benefits question or have to turn in a piece of paper. But we know that's a time when they're going to be in the building and have questions for us too. So we always like to pop into those sales meetings or big group meetings, just because we know sometimes they'll be like, oh, I see you. Seeing you reminded me I meant to ask you, you know, and I feel like it helps us get some productive time in front of the team.
Yeah, I think those are both great points. There is such a value to, we know we'll have all the decision makers together at that point, right? It's easy sometimes when it's one-to-one, but when you start involving a bigger and bigger team, having a regular time that everybody sets aside for those group issues, that is a really powerful aspect of the meeting that I hadn't considered even, but you're exactly right. It's there. And I think, you know, the challenge right now, obviously, as we deal with COVID summer, is how do we recreate that in a virtual environment? And I know we're using Microsoft Teams now for a lot of things, which is good. In fact, one of the things that I'm working on, and I think IT is going to be working on as well, as creating some virtual office hours where I've now got times that, you know, this is when I'm going to be working on a particular project. Say, for example, we have our Go Canvas platform that we use for managing performance and doing field evaluations. That requires me to sit down and make time for Go Canvas a couple times a month to update the system and put new information in or make changes to surveys. What we're going to be starting soon is to make that a regularly scheduled event on Teams where people can sort of drop by the virtual office. And so as a leader, you could do the same thing. You could say, you know what, Thursday from 2 to 4, I'm going to be at the desk doing my desk stuff and I'm going to leave Teams open. And if you want to drop by, that's the time to just pop in on a Teams meeting. You know, I'll be sitting there with my Teams meeting open and you can just hop in, have a conversation, catch up on a thing. So even though we are, you know, distantly removed, I think if we think outside the box a little bit, we can get back to some of those. Or, you know, I know a lot of our sales teams are starting to move their meetings into Teams. There's no reason, because there's no limit on sizes, that HR or safety can't pop into those meetings if they want to. So I think it's incumbent on us all to ask ourselves, what are we really trying to get at? And we'll find the right tool to fill that space. But you know, it's really about, I think, protecting the time and making sure that we commit to, we're going to sit down together for this amount of time at this time and place so that we all get this done. If Apple, who is a $2 trillion company and measures their time in amount of revenue per $1 billion a minute, can find time every Friday morning for their 5 highest paid, most important executives to sit around a table together, for the love of goodness, we can do it too. That's my mission and statement. We can make time for meetings, the right ones, the good ones, the ones that matter, I think it's so important. Other thoughts on meetings?
Jeff, I really love your point you just made, because one thing that I fear in the COVID summer is I've got 30 employees out all over the city, and I always impress upon them, when you are on a sales route, you own your own small business. Well, I don't want them to own it so much so that I don't ever hear from them or see them or have any interaction with them. So I love the idea about scheduling a 2-hour block on a Thursday afternoon to just leave Teams open. And if you want to pop in and have a chat, you're more than welcome to do that, because we just don't have the luxury of that in-person communication. So the next best thing is Teams. And it's a phenomenal idea.
It's all about finding the right tool for the job, but it's the most important part is block and protect that time. Other thoughts on meetings? Anybody else having luck or success with any kind of meetings or strategies that are working, or things that you can clue us in on that would be helpful?
I mean, in delivery, we have weekly meetings as long as it's warranted. But yeah, I'll have a weekly meeting, and it kind of gives me a chance where throughout the week, I'm collecting feedback from all the other departments, looking at things, you know, that I need to address with my team. So instead of, you know, sending out 15 emails every single day, I kind of compile all the notes, you know, think about what we're going to talk about. I'll come up with solutions to the problem. And it basically just gives me a clean, easy format, you know, to communicate with the rest of my team, to put that information out instead of it kind of being scattered throughout the week. So that's usually what I use my meetings for.
Yeah. That's exactly it. You know, meetings are like goldfish. They'll grow to the size of their container. If you schedule 30 minutes, you'll find a way to fill 30 minutes. But I think the hardest part is, as you talk about there, is it's build the habit. Just get it started. You know, if you're done early because there isn't as much this week, it's never a problem to end early. I've never had anybody have a meeting end early and been upset about it, right? So it's real easy to say, hey, we're done now. It took us 10 minutes and we did it. But it's that, just like getting on the treadmill is that habit of, I got to get the tennis shoes on and get on it every day. Having that weekly meeting is the habit of, we got to have the meeting. At least we got to start the meeting. If we end early, if we can't finish it, fine. If we get better, over time, you'll find that they will grow and become bigger and more things. But I like where Dave even talks about that and says, you know, our first couple of meetings were kind of like everybody just telling each other what we worked on last week and what we're going to work on next week. But over time, they became the cornerstone of that group. And I think that's the hard part as leaders, is we have to prioritize that time, make that time, get it started, and then watch as it grows into something bigger and more useful. The last thing I want to ask you guys about, because I thought it was an interesting idea that he talked about, is the weekly reports that he has his team do. What did you guys think about the weekly reports?
I love this. This high and low, or as I like to call it, roses and thorns. I mean, yeah. And you know, he has them, the first piece, he has them say why the owner should be glad I work here, which I just think is good for your own development anyway. You know, I think people get their job done and their tasks done and their responsibilities done, but think of the things that you actually put into your work every day that, you know, may not be seen by your supervisor, and what a great time to put it down and kind of pat yourself on the back. But then that highs and lows of the week, I think is, I just love this whole idea. So this might be coming to HR soon.
Coming to an HR team near you. Mm-hmm. We're going to start asking your girls about their roses and thorns each week and how it went. I like it. Other thoughts on the weekly report?
Yeah, kind of to back up what Suzanne was just saying, I like the idea of calling it roses and thorns. I think that's pretty neat, you know. But I think it's important to kind of reach out to your people and find out exactly what's going on their lives without that has nothing to do with work, to be honest with you. You know, I have one of my teammates, I didn't even think about the fact that her husband is a bartender who's been out of work since March. And it's like, and you know, and just in conversation, she had told me about this 2 weeks ago. And it's like, and it's one of those things where, you know, maybe if you're filling out the highs and lows or roses and thorns, you know, maybe it's something that comes up in, you know, on that page, but at least it puts me in a perspective of I can understand what's going on in her mind and in her world, you know, versus just, hey, how's it going? You know, did you get everything done? Or, you know, do you have any issues with any problem accounts? Or, I mean, everything is so business professional focused that it kind of showcases what's going on outside of the person's life, you know? And I think it's pretty important.
I love this idea. Every level within JJ Minnesota, and I'm sure it's the same in Florida, does a weekly recap or a weekly report or a check-in with their supervisor of what they accomplished last week and what they're planning to do the next week. That said, I think the most important thing is that we act on that as leaders. If we're asking our people to do that, we should care enough to reply to it when it's warranted and offer feedback, advice, and attaboy if it's warranted. If we care enough to ask them to do it, we should care enough to let them know that we're acting on it. So it doesn't just become another mindless task that they feel they're being forced to do.
Yeah, to kind of piggyback on what Dan was just saying, we actually, and we've kind of gotten away from it, but we used to have our support guys, you know, our set analysts, our team leads, they would do a weekly recap for us. And that was the one thing that we were always told is make sure you pick a couple things out of their recap and respond back to it and say, oh, that was great, or all right, well, how could we work on this? Because you want them to know you care, that you cared enough to read it, and that you actually care. Not they're just sending off some email to the outer space and then that nobody's ever looking at it, but that somebody's actually reading it and cares about it. So, and that's something we've got to get back to doing. We were doing it a lot. I'm going to blame COVID for why we're not doing it anymore, because you can always blame COVID, but that is definitely something we need to get back to doing as well.
If 2020 had a hashtag, it would be, you can always blame COVID. That's, you know, I tend to lean the way Dave and his team does on anything that feels too corporate or too put together can be a bit of a challenge. But I think what's great about the way they approach this was it's pretty loose in structure. And it really is just the idea of being reflective at the end of each week and saying, you know, what went well? What was a win? What was an opportunity? What am I going to work on for the, you know, week ahead that didn't get done this week that needs to carry over? You know, we talked about at the beginning when we talk about goal setting, and if you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time. Well, if we're not taking the time at the end of a week to recap what went right, we don't know what to celebrate. And if we don't know what we missed, how do we know what we're going to aim at for the week ahead? And so I do really love the idea of having some kind of weekly report. And I love that they were so casual and so less structured about it, that it isn't some kind of, you know, it's not the TPS report that my boss has to fill out three times and I have to hear from the Bobs about. But instead, it's something that I can just really sit down and be reflective on, and what worked and what didn't and what am I going to focus on next time. I think they're onto something there, and I think there's a lot of potential value in it for a lot of us. So I thought it was a fun bit that he talked about towards the end. Final thoughts on communication, this map to the party that we're putting together, and anything else that we didn't touch on you wanted to?
I actually have a question for the group about those reports. So if we were to incorporate the, you know, the roses and thorns, the highs and lows, would you guys also do one to share with your team, or at least to get them started, or how would you guys start that?
I think that's a great idea.
I agree, Chris. That's a great idea.
I would too. I think leaders have to go first, right? That's, we lead from the head. And so if we're not willing to do it, we shouldn't be asking them to do it. And it might be a good way to kick off that staff meeting that we've been saying we need to get going is, all right, well, why don't we all bring our weekly recap from last week to our staff meeting on Monday morning and tell what went well, what were the roses and thorns of last week that we can look ahead to. All right. Well, as always, great discussion, guys. Thanks so much for helping us break down this map to the party. We're going to wrap this one up and put it in the bank. So appreciate you being here. Dan, thanks for joining us as always.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Lisa, glad to have you with us.
Thanks, Jeff.
Dustin, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
My pleasure. Chris, as always.
Thanks, Jeff.
And Suzanne, our favorite rose of the group. Thank you for bringing such good ideas.
Thanks for having us.
All right. We appreciate you peddling those on us. Okay. So, oh, I did. I can't believe I went there. I'll kick that out in the edit. That was awful. What am I doing? All right. And for all of us, thank you for joining us again for this week's episode of the Brew University Book Club podcast. We'll be back again next week with another installment as we get onto Chapter 11. We look forward to seeing you then.